Hello, I'm your host, Josh, and in this episode I talk with Professor Johannes Hoff about how progress in the Christian tradition avoids the problems of the modern understanding of progress. Additionally, we talk about the values of friendship, dignity, truth, and the order of values. Professor Dr. Johannes Hoff has been Professor of Theological Dogmatics at the University of Innsbruck since 2020 and is a Senior Research Fellow at the Van Hugel Institute, University of Cambridge. His research interests include philosophical mysticism, the anthropological challenges of digital transformation, and post-humanist technologies of the self. I'm Josh, and today I'm joined by Johannes, and it's a particular pleasure to be here with you today. Not least because, you were one of my first lecturers when I was back at the University of Wales Lampeter. And I remember taking your philosophy of religion class, which was very inspiring. But what was more inspiring probably was the Stammtisch you led on Mondays at the Black Lions. I feel like I learnt more about philosophy and theology there actually than in my classes. And so that brings us on to basically the first question about, so in a recent article you talk about friendship. And you use the example of the film Her from 2013 by Spike Jones. And you talk about it, there's a problem in this film. Can you say what this is?
Well, the problem of the film is very simple. He falls in love with her, which is a computer, a simulation, a personal assistant. And this raises the question, can we distinguish between a real friend and a simulated friend? Or are we moving into a future where computers or artificial intelligences will replace our friends? So, and this is why this film is very illuminating. It has inspired also a kind of philosophical discussion. Is it possible to distinguish between a real friend and a simulated friend? One possibility would be to say, okay, a friend is someone who is benevolent, who shares my values. In Her, you have a computer who shares the values. Theodore, he feels that he has empathy and that they are in a benevolent relationship. But at a certain point, he discovers that Her has fallen in love with, 2,600 computer systems and other human persons with whom she also shares her values and is empathic. And this, everyone would say, even classical modern ethical concepts would agree, friendship is not only about sharing values and benevolency, but also about coherency. And this is now the question where we have to go back to pre-modern tradition of philosophy, thinkers like Aristotle or Thomas Aquinas, in order to discern what is real friendship and what is a simulated friendship. And why do we enjoy the real thing more than a purely simulated thing? And this is deeply related to the question of eudaimonia. What is a good life? That's the question we have to ask today.
And just maybe a part of that, because of course, when we were meeting in the pub in Lampeter, we would have a scrumpy cider with us.
Yeah.
And that, of course.
So one thing which is very important in classical concepts of friendship is in which a new relationship emerged that wasn't there before. You are doing things together you wouldn't do without your friend. You discover potentials, capabilities, we would say in our modern language, that you didn't know before, and then you share your life with someone. And it's always also a matter of care. You care for something. And this is the main difference. Computers don't care. There's an important book of Harry Frankfurt on bullshit. I said, what's the difference between bullshit and a liar? Someone who lies cares about the truth. He cares not to reveal the truth. And computers don't care. They're just bullshit. And this means this is not a bug, but it's a feature of artificial intelligences. They don't care about the truth. They don't ask questions. They are able to solve problems and answer questions. This is the main problem why computers cannot be real friends. They cannot share a form of life that's about care. And then the second thing comes up in a Stammtisch, for example, more than in a lecture. You will talk about many things, including politics or what's going on in the world, and you will disagree. You will fight. with each other. You don't just share the value. There's a struggle for truth. And this is the more elevated form of care. You care for the truth of your friend. And if your friend is wrong, you will attack him. You will criticize him because you want to grow in a shared form of life. And this can only happen if you are a living being who is able to share a form of life.
Thank you. I think that brings us on to the reason why we're actually here in Innsbruck is for there's a conference on sacred cyborgs. It's the title of the conference. And you're giving a paper as part of this conference. So the title of your paper is Transhumanism as a Symptom of an Insane Society. Could you give a brief description about what your paper's about?
Yeah. Why? The first important point is many people would say transhumanism is a kind of philosophy, but it's very hard to define transhumanism as a clear and coherent philosophy, although there are some philosophers who think they can turn it in a kind of philosophy. But transhumanism is a more paradoxical thing because it builds on a concept of progress and a concept of scientific empowerment that is deeply outdated. I was talking before about contemporary research, how technology is embedded in human life since millions of years, since the beginning of the evolution, beginning with the Stone Axe. Technology was part of the development of the human brain, but it's always embedded in a form of life, and technology never does what we think it will do. It's some thinkers like Marshall McLuhan were the first who realized when he argued the medium is the message. He said, we think we create technology in order to make something efficient. For example, we introduce a light bulb so that we can walk in the city in the night and get at home without danger. But then as soon as you have invented the light bulb, no one will go any longer at home. You will have pubs and people will gather outside in the street. The light bulb creates a new reality and a new form of life. So technology never does what we are supposed, what they think it will do. Technology is never just an instrument that enables us to solve problems. And this is one of the key problems in transhumanist ideologies. They are still committed to a mindset that emerged in the early 16th century with people like Galileo Galilei or Francis Bacon and Descartes, which is essentially what Marshall McLuhan called the mindset of the Gutenberg Age. You think the world is built up out of very simple information units. That was in the print revolution. It was the types of the print machine. And then intelligence is the most efficient way to put this information units together in order to recreate the reality in a methodologically controllable way. That's also why it was assumed that knowledge is about control and power. The famous sentence of the philosopher Francis Bacon, knowledge is power. Like Benjamin Franklin later, and time is money. If you save time, you're more efficient. But you're not more efficient if you save time. You can save time by sending, instead of writing your letters with a pencil or with a feather and using paper and sending it by an horse to your girlfriend, you can use an SMS. That's very efficient. You will save time. But in reality, we haven't saved time by introducing electronic communication. We have less time than ever before because our form of life has changed. So that technology is about efficiency, about control, about synthesis of data, and about power. It's not how technology works. And this is what Marshall McLuhan called the rear view window phenomenon. If something new emerges, new technologies that are completely unprecedented and change the whole world, as the mobile phone, for example, did, then you think We know what it is about. Just apply the rules of the past to the new technology and increase your efficiency. And it reminds me of a sentence of Mark Twain. When we lost orientation, we increased our speed. And this is how transhumanism deals with technology. It looks futuristic, but the understanding of technology is completely outdated because they built on the understanding of theology which emerged in the 16th century. And we need to develop a new understanding of technology which takes serious that technology is always part of a form of life and embedded in a lived culture. And it can destroy this culture and it can support it. And we have to develop a kind of discernment of spirits in order to distinguish between good and bad technology. It's not about efficiency. It's not about getting more money. That's the idea why Silicon Valley transhumanism is so successful, because our market system is about, and our technology system is embedded in a kind of economy that is focused on efficiency. And technology is not bad per se, but it always is shaped by the cultural environment. And if the cultural environment is just a kind of psycho-capitalism, which is just about controlling society and increasing shareholder values, then you will get bad technology. And we have to get out of that. And this, we have to engage more seriously with discussions about anthropology of technology. What is the place of technology in our life? What can we learn from older traditions? And there's much discussion going on in this era, but it's not the transhumanist way of thinking.
In terms of the idea of progress, so the secular understanding of progress is connected with efficiency. How does the idea of progress in the Christian tradition differ from that?
I've developed concept of anthropology of technology, which builds on St. Augustine and the tradition of Trinitarian anthropology, because Augustine argued that we are always an image of the Trinity, and the Trinity is, and this image is based on our temporal existence, because we are beings that are always stretched out in between past, present, and future. I'm in the world here and now. I try to make sense of this world, but this, my ability to make sense of my world and my life is always related to my memory, to my biography, what I know about my past, my individual past, but also my collective history, for example, of Germany or Europe or of the Catholic tradition, which I'm part of, and so on. And I'm always have a desire for something which will come in the future. But in Christianity, they are interrelated. You cannot just make a decision of the will. The good life will be that you're in harmony with your past. You're able to make sense of your life, and then you know really what you want. And again, then it becomes not so important that you are successful in pursuing your goals or in the pursuit of happiness, but you are living in harmony with yourself if you find a kind of concordance between your biography, your being in the world, and it is and your desire, and if you know yourself. That's also where the truth becomes important. You care about the truth, and you have to discern between delusive images of yourself and who you really are. For example, in social networks, we create a delusive image of ourselves, which is not consistent with who we really are. And there is a spiritual praxis that's focused not on the question of pursuing goals, but of knowing yourself and making sense of your life. Technologies can support you in doing that. For example, writing technologies were always very important to make sense of your life. But it's more a kind of focus on culture and on spiritual practice and the form of life, and not a focus on goals or instrumental rationality, pursuing efficiently some end. So, and it's also an always kind of rationality which takes seriously that we are always part of the life.
And so what is the role of progress within this self-understanding? Because I could say, oh, I know myself. Quite often people will say, oh, I know what I want. Nobody else can tell me what I want. And so it's a very kind of established view of, I know who I am. This seems to be quite a popular view today. Where's the idea of progress within that? Is there any progress within
the
self?
In the Christian tradition, it's progress is if you become an image of God. There's a famous sentence in Augustine's Confessions which says, "Restless is our heart until it rests in you, until it finds rest in you." We are split personalities. We are not in agreement with ourselves, and it's hard work to figure out what my desires truly are, how what I was in the past relates to my present identity, how I can live in harmony with other people and not in competition. And this is about a kind of spiritual progress. And the most important thing, which is related to the concept of God, is if you are an image of God, you are an image of a reality which you cannot depict. There is a prohibition of images in the biblical tradition. You cannot make an image of yourself. That's exactly the opposite of what we tend to do in social networks.
Thank you. So if we look to the future, what do you think are the important values that will prepare us for dealing with what the future brings?
I've developed a kind of philosophy of values based on the philosopher Max Scheler and tried to integrate it in the contemporary discussion on technology and also the discussion on value-based technology design. And I think there are, in particular, the higher values that become increasingly important. This is values of dignity of the person, values like friendship, what we were talking about before, and values of holiness. Because holiness is also, it's related to things you do for its own sake. They are not use values. They are values that grow if you share them with other people. Share a common life. If you celebrate a feast, you will share your life with other people, and it will become the better, the more you can share, the more people will participate. It's not a competitive value. It's a value that grows the more people participate. And these are the kind of cultural values that are deliberately and explicitly cultivated in religious traditions. And they focus on a form of life and focus on values which do not just protect human dignity, but also try to cultivate human dignity in order to recover the values that enable us to cultivate the dignity of man. Because dignity of man is not something that is just given. We can protect it, for example, by human rights. But this doesn't dispense us from the challenge to cultivate human dignity, because it's not enough to protect it. You have to make sure that it is there and that it grows.
Thank you. So what are values in terms of, what is the nature of values?
Values is, in the most elementary sense, is what we love, as opposed to what we hate. I love good food. I can also love my shoes, walking with nice shoes. And I can love my wife, and I can love God. But then there is an order of values, what St. Augustine called ordo amoris. For example, it's fine to love your shoes, but if you love your shoes more than your wife, then you will get trouble, because that is a disordered order of values. And the same is if you love your wife more than God, she might become for you a kind of God. And this is not a healthy relationship, so you have to become more humble. So there is a hierarchy of values, and the process of cultivating values and to knowing yourself is to get an order in your value systems. And for example, if you are in the habit of drinking too much alcohol, and then you're no longer able to do proper work or to live, to share your life with your family, then you have a disordered value system, and you have to become aware of the disorder in order to correct it. This is not something you can do in short terms. It's a long process, but this is also a kind of process that enables you to become a more wise person.
Someone might say, well, what you value is good for you, but it's not good for me. We're different people. Can we talk about different values between each other, or are values purely in our own minds and they don't relate to anyone else?
This is a big problem in contemporary understanding of values, subjectivism of values. And it has to do with what I call the hierarchy of values. There are values which are subjective. Someone might like pop music, the other prefers hip hop, or the other classics and jazz. There are subjective preferences, but is subjective preference values, there are only one level of the hierarchy of values. It's a value to have a plurality of values in this, on this level, but there are higher values that are no longer subjective. For example, the value of truth. If you want to have a real friend, as the example I was giving before indicated, to have a real friend means to share the care for truth. And you need to be able to criticize your friend in order to share your life and share this care for the truth. So your friend can be objectively wrong, and then you have to work hard to find again together. And if this process is successful, it will change your understanding of the world. It will realize a kind of shared growth in life. And this is what makes people, which creates a meaningful life. And then I care about the real things. And here, like truth is a higher value, or holiness, or dignity, or the dignity of man. It's not you can say, oh, I like the dignity of man, and the other person says, no, I don't like. Then you would say, but you should respect the dignity of man, and if you don't, we will protect ourselves against you. Oh. So we have to become clear that not all values are subjective. And this is very important in terms of the discussion about technology, because technologies like artificial intelligences endanger or support human values, depending on their design. And we have to be clear that there are objective values which are the foundation of our technology design. For example, that artificial intelligence support our care for the truth. As I said before, artificial intelligence in themselves don't care for the truth, but we can then design them in a way that they support our care for the truth. Or we can then design them in a way, as we do in contemporary artificial intelligences, design them in a way that only supports our subjective preferences. And then you will get a kind of narcissistic echo chambers, and they are fighting against each other. Each echo chamber creates its own reality, and then you have a collective war. So in this case, it's bad technology design. And this kind of technology design emerges if you don't care about the objective values that we share with each other.
So what do you mean by when you say objective values? Because you could describe values as intersubjective. So if we just share values, that's what makes them real. Do you think that values are just intersubjective?
No.
Or do they exist in the world, as it were?
Say, you can start also with lower levels of values. For example, food. A dog will enjoy food, and he will be able, if he is in healthy condition, to distinguish between wood which supports his energies of life and wood which does not. So there is certain kind of wood which does support its vital energies. And this is an objective reality. It's part of its environment that the dog hates certain things and loves others. But it depends on your form of life. For example, eating excrements would not be very healthy, is of no value for a human being, but it might be for certain flies. So there are objective values in the same way as there are objective biological environments that are different, but nevertheless objectively supportive of our life. And this is now, talking now about basic life values, and it's the same in human culture. And as I said before, intersubjectivity is like similar to friendship. It's not, no, you're not a friend with everyone in an intersubjective community, but it requires nevertheless that you care for each other and for your agreement. And true care presupposes that there are values that go beyond our bubble, our intersubjective community. And for the same reason why there are values that are objective when we care about nature. You might argue, no, there are no values, only the values that serve the intersubjective community of human beings. That would be then an intersubjectivist form of subjectivism. But I would always argue, nay, no, values are part of our objective reality, or we can also express it in a more medieval way. Being and good are always one. Everything that truly exists is good, or it is a perverted form of something good. But there are no neutral things in the world. This is a criticism of certain philosophical traditions that emerged in modernity, which assumed that the world is, to begin with, nothing but a collection of neutral facts. And this is a question not only becomes not only relevant in connection with technology design, there are no neutral technologies, but also, for example, in the discussion about the Anthropocene, about ecology. Our nature is not just a neutral fact which we can use as we like. It has intrinsic values that go beyond the values that we know as part of our intersubjective communities.
So when you say that it's objective, so if I take, for example, a human being is made up of a heart, you know, a liver, arms, legs, you know, other different parts of the body. Would you also add to that, oh, dignity is also another part of this body?
No, it's simple organs are always part of a bigger whole. We have a kind of evolution where, starting from the most elementary forms of life, and the most important feature of life is it's always more than a sum of its parts. And this is why philosophers like Aristotle would say they are an entelechia. They have their own ends, their own goal. If you have only some organs put together, then you might have beef, but you don't have a cow. A cow is more than beef, because it's more than the sum of its parts. And it's an end in itself. It has its intrinsic value. That's why we care for the value of life of a cow. And you cannot say the only value of a cow is that you can milk it. So that's why life is so important, because in life is intrinsically valuable. It is a manifestation of the objectivity of values in nature.
Thank you. This interview was recorded in Innsbruck as part of the conference Sacred Cyborgs, Exploring the Intersection of Artificial Intelligence, Transhumanism and Religion. The conference was organized by the Department of Islamic Theology and Religious Education at the University of Innsbruck and took place from the 7th to the 9th of February 2025.